This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Getting you ready for all the biggest games across the college sports world. This is BetQLU with RJ Choppy and Jeffrey Wright.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to BetQLU's The Introduction to Jess. My name is Jeffrey Wright. My co-host back with us this week is RJ Choppy. RJ, of course, the co-host of Sean and RJ on 105.3 The Fan in Dallas, Monday through Friday, 5:30 to 10 a.m. You can follow him on Twitter at RJ Choppy. I am on J929 ESPN. I guess let's start with the news, RJ.
Yeah.
I think if you've been paying attention to the college football playoff, you kind of got the sense that this is where it's headed. Today, the CFP announces there will not be any expansion. They're going to write out the rest of the contracts. That will go until 2026. No consensus could be agreed upon, RJ. I feel like kind of where I am right now is like, over the summer, there was just so much optimism. You know, you get the announcement about the 12-team playoff, and I don't think college sports have ever had a proposal that was as unanimously praised and agreed upon as that was at the time. And then, of course, the SEC goes and gets Texas and Oklahoma, and all of a sudden, you know, everyone's doing the Spider-Man meme, pointing at each other. Well, if it's good for the SEC, we can't do this. What's your read on this right now? Because I think for me, the issue is forget about the near future. Like, if they can't come to an agreement right now, why would they be able to come to one in 2026? And they've already proven that they're not willing. Everyone's kind of willing to even work against their own self-interest. You know, like what we're seeing, I'm just here at this, like, everyone thinks like it's going to expand. I don't know why? Like it should have expanded now. And here we are.
You know, look, I mean, I'm an SEC guy. I know you live in SEC country as well. It does seem like this is the boo-hoo party that has come on with this, that everybody is upset that, you know, the SEC got Oklahoma and Texas, and now they want to fire back by doing this. I think they're, like you said, they're acting against their own best self-interests. If you want to make sure that Alabama doesn't make the playoffs every year, don't have a 12-team playoff. They almost missed it this year. I listened to a lot of stuff on the way home from work today of, you know, various national radio talk show people, and they're all basically spewing the same talking points, which is, you know, college football hurt itself. We need a 12-team playoff, yada, yada, yada. And I'm like, you know, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, but that's great. But, you know, this is like our game. Like, you know, there's a lot of people out there who have opinions of college football that aren't really college football fans. And I don't really care about talking about it. Like,
the problem that I've had the last year or so is it feels like the people that are driving the conversation in college football are not college football fans. Like,
right.
That's why they want it to look like the NFL. Like, that's because that's what they know. That's what they understand. They understand the NFL. And for all the reasons that you and I have documented, from it's just not going to be a fair sport. Like, it's just, that's the nature of it. Whether we can argue the morality of it, but that's the reality of the situation. The NFL model doesn't work. And I think that's kind of been my larger feeling in general, particularly, you know, the last 7-8 months. Listen, I'm a capitalist just like every other human being. Like, go get your money. It does feel like in college football more than ever, they're trying to chase money, but they don't really know how to do it. And that's kind of what I've always, you know what I mean? Like, in the end, it feels like the last concern is what makes our product better. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, how in the end, it's all about chasing money, but they don't really know how to do it. And I think there's just so much money flying around. They're like, well, we'll do this, we'll do that. Like, there is just no direction whatsoever in the sport.
No, there's not. And that's the problem when you have, you know, a bunch of different commissioners all trying to decide what to do instead of having one overlord, if you want to call it that.
Commissioner. You know, like, yeah. I mean, you know, you can, yeah.
Why do you have Bob Bowlesby and you know, over here? Then why do you have the Pac-12 commissioner? Why do you have the SEC commissioner? Why do you have the Big Ten? You know, they all have different interests, and their interests are never going to align. The Big 12 is never going to have the same interests as the Big Ten. They're completely different. You know, like, there is the high and mighty academic Big Ten, and the SEC is like, you know what? We know what we are. We're a sports conference. You know, we got Vanderbilt here to kind of balance things out. Well, they don't have a lot of the same similar interests. They got some. So I just think it's really, really difficult to come some consensus on what to do with the college football playoff when you have five different conferences, all with their own self-interest, all who want what's best for their member institutions, but none who have the overall scope of the sport in mind.
Yeah, I kind of wonder if this is the beginning of what has been kind of discussed for years. I mean, heck, I remember Tommy Tuberville talking about it in the early 2000s, that it's headed to the quote-unquote super conferences, and that there's the breaking of the way that keeps, you know, kind of being discussed. I'm not even necessarily saying, like, I don't even know, honestly, like, what it will look like, but the thing that you point out there that I do think is going to start motivating people, I think what we're going to see is there's going to be a lot of schools that are, okay, what are our interests? What are our motivations? And the funny thing is, I actually think a school like Ohio State is much more aligned with Georgia and Alabama than it is with Northwestern. And so what is interesting to me is to see, is there going to be someone that's able to unite these like-minded schools? And that is what brings the breaking away, because USC is going to be way more aligned with those schools than they are with Cal and with Stanford. And so, like, I am interested to see if maybe this starts expediting it, because in this name, image, and likeness world that we're living in which a signing class is getting $31 million, the schools that are like Ohio State and USC, like, I think they're going to acknowledge, like, we've got to make sure that we can stay with them and compete with them. Yeah. And it honestly may be the ultimate example. If you can't beat them, join them. Like, I am fascinated to see if this starts moving things more quickly, because right now it just feels like everyone's just kind of trying to kick the can, you know, down the curb, and they're not getting anywhere. And I honestly think that's kind of what motivated Texas and Oklahoma to go to the SEC. Like, they tried to work on the television deal with the Big 12, and they didn't really get anywhere. And then all of a sudden they look around, they go, well, I guess you can't beat them, join them. Like, I do wonder if this is going to start moving things like that.
It might. I mean, I do think that if they wanted to go to an NFL style format, you know, they're going to have to cut it down to one conference, you know, and just and expand the season. You know, to have it the way it is now, there's no way that they can, you know, I don't think, make it so everyone is absolutely satisfied. I really don't. There are so many, and you're right, Ohio State's interests are much more closely aligned with Georgia's than they are with Northwestern. Maryland, Rutgers. I mean, those schools, those aren't football powerhouses. You know, those are more, regular, normal academic type institutions, not on the level of Northwestern, obviously. You know, and so I think Vanderbilt, I mean, what does Vanderbilt and Tennessee have in common? Like, they share the same major highway. Like, that's really it. And the people who go to Tennessee just didn't get into Vandy. That's another part. So there's not a whole, even within conferences themselves, there's not a whole lot of similarities with every school. That doesn't mean that you can't have a conference, but it does make it much more difficult to everybody on the same page. And just like it makes it difficult within one conference to get them on the same page, now you've got regions that are different. You know, priorities in each region are different. Football is religion in the South. It is not religion on the West Coast. It is not religion in the Northeast, college football at least. You know, so like everyone's interests are different, and that's why it becomes so difficult to nail down exactly what they're going to do and what they want to do.
Yeah, and I think kind of the thing that has stood out to me is, in the end, the money is going to be where television is. And the thing about television, and I'm going to try to be a realist, the NFL's TV product is about as good as it can get. Like, they have the games down pat. Like, they, you know, you got whatever, 8 games that start at noon. All 8 usually end within 5 to 10 minutes of each other. Like, they know how to do the television product. College football is not really a great television product. The games are entirely too long. Like, no one's willing to fix that. It's always been more of a game day experience than it is a television product.
Yeah.
And so I keep wondering, like, if television's going to be, in the end, like, if television is what's driving all of this, does that just inherently make the product worse? Because, you know what I mean? Like, I just don't think ESPN, I think they get college football from a sense of what their target demo is, but ESPN's always going to be interested in what's best for ESPN. Like, they're not worried about saving a sport. Right. They're worried about their profit.
Sure. You know, and college football's got to recognize that. They're going to have to stopping the clock after a first down. That is probably the number one, probably not probably, it is the number one reason why these games take 5 hours. I sat in Kyle Field in 2016 during a 5.5 hour football game. And I'll tell you what, it felt like it flew by. But I was at the stadium.
Right.
And I had never been to Kyle Field. And I lived 3 hours away from it. And I'd never been there. I was like, I want to go. Yes, you're absolutely right.
You don't care about a 5-minute or a 4-minute commercial break if you're at the game. That's when you go get a Coke. Or, you know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's,
yeah.
Like, okay, during that. But it's like, you know, it really stands out to, I don't know how you felt this fall, but I mean, I'm someone that watches a ton of games, period. It really stood out to me this fall. It's like, you know, we had, you know, 8 screens in here, and there are times when all 8 games are on commercial break. And you're like, yo, this, there's got to be something to be done.
I'm jealous you guys have 8 screens. We only have 3 in ours. That's
we had to bring in multiple Apple TVs.
Okay. That's fair. Yeah. I mean, look, I this year was, you know, the first year that I also kind of noticed it. And I'll tell you what, this is also the first year where both my sons were playing select baseball. So I missed quite a bit. And I'll be honest, there were times when I didn't miss it. I didn't miss that, you know, Southern, you know, SoCon Saturday in the SEC. I didn't miss some of these bad games that that took place in the early part of the year. You know, there were some times where, you know, some weeks I was like, man, you know what? I wish I could have seen that game. And then there were others all like, you know what? Not a big deal. I watched as much as I could. I would follow it on my phone. We would have, you know, some, there's TVs, a lot of these ballparks we go play at now. So, but it, you know, they are so long, and they've got to make it a better TV product. You're absolutely right.
I just think kind of like the overall theme that I'm noticing, and, you know, who knows, maybe I'll look back on this in 2 years and I realize, like, I was just, you know, when I was Chicken Little. But the thing that seems to be common throughout, whether we're talking about the college football playoff expansion, whether we're talking about conference alignment, whether we're talking about, you know, what to do about games and whatnot, NIL legislature, or, you know, are we going to come up with rules for the transfer portal? The thing that really, really sticks out to me is the fact that there's no leadership, there's no consensus, there's really no one, like, there's no one stepping up and saying, like, we've got to do something. And it's just, it's that weird question of, like, okay, well, if you don't do something, like, at a certain point, like, I don't know, crisis might be strong. Like, there is an identity crisis, I think, at the least in college sports right now.
Yeah, there is. They want to be amateur, but they know they're not.
Right.
And that becomes very difficult to manage. You know, when you try to create the facade that you're an amateur sport when, you know, Bruce Pearl makes more. Jim Harbaugh is the ninth highest paid NFL coach. Bruce Pearl makes 20% more money a year than the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. Bruce Pearl is coaching Auburn basketball. That is at best the fourth most important team in its own state. Like, and that's the state of Alabama. Let me, with
to your,
no
to your point, Zach Lee, we saw the, now he got a new contract with the Bengals, but like they showed his deal. He made like SEC basketball coach money, not even SEC football coach money.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, like the, God, the guy's name has escaped me. The Missouri football coach, Eli.
Eli Drinkwitz.
He makes the same amount of money as Mike McCarthy. He's coaching Missouri.
And not really that well.
No. Like, we're talking about, like, the NFL coaches are so grossly underpaid compared to college athletics. And, you know, you can't have it like that and then try to also put the facade in that you're amateur sports.
So much for listening to us. Why, when we come back, let's turn our attention to the world of college basketball. It's February. We're inching towards March. We're starting to figure out who these teams are. We'll discuss that next right here on BetQLU.
From tailgates to rushing the field, on Saturday, it's BetQLU in the action. From noon to 8 Eastern, available on BetQL and the Odyssey app.
All right, here we go.
You're listening to BetQLU with RJ Choppy and Jeffrey Wright.
Hey, welcome back to BetQLU. He's RJ Choppy. I am Jeffrey Wright. Let's get into the world of college basketball. Before we get into the games, RJ, let's just go big picture. Now that we're sitting in, you know, we're here in the middle of February, I guess close to the end of February, we're starting to get a look at the landscape. When you look at the landscape thus far, how many teams out there have you seen that you sit there and you go, okay, I can see them actually winning a title?
You know, I could see Gonzaga. I could see Arizona, Baylor. I could see Kentucky win it. Auburn. I can see Auburn winning it. Although they might be lower on my list for some reason. I don't know. It's just the way the tournament goes, heavy guard play.
Yeah. I feel like the hesitation with Auburn is the fact that they are so good in the front court, but typically when we see teams that, you know, win titles, it's usually guard heavy.
Yeah. I can see UCLA. I can see UCLA winning it. And you know, I might be able to throw in a Houston.
Houston's really banged up. If they get Sasser back, maybe. I don't know, man. I've watched them recently with a lot closer eyes being here in Memphis. It reminds me of a team that is a really good, solid team that may not make it out of the first weekend. You know what they remind me of? The Mick Cronin Cincinnati teams. Like, you know they're good. Like, you don't want to, but at the same time, that's not who I really want to back come tourney time.
Right. You're right. I mean, they're a classic team that might be overseeded and get stuck with an underseeded team and get upset in the first round. Like, they might be one, not a first round, but that'd be tough. But you know what I mean?
You can already see it now. Everyone's going to have that upset too on the bracket, and everyone's going to talk about their bracket. You can see it. Like, down goes Houston.
Yeah, they're ripe for a 2 seed to get beat by a 7 seed Iowa.
Yeah.
Seton Hall, whatever. You know what I mean? Like,
someone shoots them out of the building.
Yep. And that's the problem with some of these teams. You know, like, you get up towards the top. You know, at the top, you're great. But, you know, outside of those five or six handful of teams, you know, you got a lot of schools, a lot of teams that just don't have that one guy they can count on if they're in a 6-minute drought. And that's part of the problem with college basketball anyway, is so many of these teams don't have that one go-to player that can win them a game when the rest of the guys aren't making anything.
One team I want to talk about, and I know you got eyes on them because your team played them this week. I really liked how Kentucky was trending. I've mentioned to you my theory of when Cal goes from these kids to my guys, that's when you just start hammering them, because that means he actually likes his team. I do think the one issue that you see with them is they're a very good team, but if Ty Washington is not playing at a high level, and right now he's clearly banged up, like, I don't know. What did you think of Kentucky? Because, I mean, to me, like, that was the classic.
Yeah.
Tennessee jumped on him, kind of suffocated him the rest of the game. But, I mean, that was one of the more disappointing efforts I've seen from Kentucky.
Yeah, it was. I was with you. I was very bullish. Is it bullish? Is that the right word when they're going up?
Yeah.
When you're trending up on Kentucky? And I still am. I think that, you know, they may have, they may have that best player on the floor in every game they're going to play. And I am very big on them. They dominated back-to-back weeks of major games, one against Tennessee and then one against Kansas. They completely dominated. And I don't really put much stock in this loss they had to Tennessee this week, because Tennessee's a really good home team, and they haven't lost at home this year. And they're just they're a different team in Knoxville. And you know, those teams always split anyway. You know, those two schools always split their season series. So I didn't put much stock in that game from a Kentucky standpoint. I think it was much bigger for Tennessee than it was for Kentucky. Kentucky, I think, still is a massive threat, and probably the threat to me, one of the favorites to win the title.
What do you make of your Vols? Right now, they're still top five in adjusted defensive efficiency at KenPom. They're now creeping up into – they're inside the top 30 in adjusted offense. Kennedy Chandler, I feel like, is playing better, and I think that makes sense. You know, a young freshman guard, as the season goes on, he gets more comfortable and playing better. What do you make of them? Because when I was watching them earlier in the year, and, you know, they're trying to win the game 53-51, it's not – you sit – very rarely do you go, that's a team that's going to make some noise, yeah, in the tournament. But it does feel like this team is starting to kind of come together, and they're certainly improving on the offensive end.
I do think you're right. There was a time this year where they were I couldn't even watch a game. I was like, I can't do this, guys. Like, you got to entertain me somehow. I know it's my school, but come on. But you know, they have turned it around, and you know, outside of that loss to Texas, I mean, we're talking about a you know, double digit, you know, consecutive game win streak. And that loss to Texas, I mean, they could have easily won that game. They could have easily also gotten blown out. They were getting blown out in that one. They have a ceiling. They're not a title team. But, you know, I no longer think they're a shoo-in to get knocked out in the first round. I mean, you would have asked me 4 weeks ago, I would have thought, oh, they're a 5 seed. They're going to lose to a 12 again. But now, I mean, I could see them as a 4 seed, and I could see them making the second weekend. I wouldn't count on it. They'll probably wind up playing a decent team in the second round, maybe a UConn, but I could definitely see them making the second day or second weekend.
What do we do with a team like Baylor? Because I think when Baylor is at full strength, that is one of those teams that I'm like, I can see them repeating. Like, I can see them cutting down the nets again, but the injuries have just been, they've been so devastating to them, to the sense that, like, you watch them play, and on a Sunday or a Saturday night, they might look completely different than they do on Wednesday. What are we doing with Baylor right now?
You know how you'll get a school where let's just take Carolina, right? Take Carolina,
right?
Years ago, back in the post Rasheed Wallace, Jerry Stackhouse, you're bringing Carter and Jameson. They have a down year. You know, they have a down year, then they're back the following year. I think that's kind of where Baylor is right now. They lost a ton of guys to either graduation or the NBA. They still have a lot of players that are from that team, but it's not nearly the same team. There is no defensive dog that could just stop anybody. There is no that one guy I don't think they could take over a game. I think they're absolutely clearly a threat to win the title. But, I mean, I think this is a shell of last year's squad. Last year's squad... and I may be a little biased, you know, living 70 miles from Waco.
Sure.
That's one of the more underappreciated champs I can remember. Like nobody mentions them. They were a dog to Gonzaga. Everyone, you know, they put an absolute butt whooping on them. But I just, you know, I don't think a lot of people think of Baylor and think college basketball royalty, and they're not, but they're getting there. They're a good team. They're a team that can win the title, but I mean, they're not nearly what last year's was.
So we had this discussion last week when you were off. I want to get your thoughts. I think there is a case to be made that Gonzaga probably is that team that we're kind of searching for, if you will, like who is that team? Is it possible though? I feel like we went from never believing in them to they get to the Final Four, they lose a close game to Carolina in the championship game, but like that kind of changed the narrative. We started believing in them, and then it felt like last year everyone probably believed in them too much. Yeah. And then when they get popped by Baylor in the fashion that they did, have we done like an overreaction and an overcorrection in which we're probably not giving them enough credit? Because I can see where that scenario is playing out. But at the same time, I kind of had the same issue with Gonzaga that I kind of do with Auburn, but at maybe a slightly higher level. It's like part of, I think, what makes them so good is their front court. And I still am not overwhelmed by their guard play.
So Gonzaga is like the team or the player that you always thought was this choker. They always do that. And then they finally get there, and now you're like, oh, okay. All right, maybe they're not. And then they blow it. And then you use that one data point where they blew it to completely trash on everything they've just done to get there to that point. And I think that's where we are with Gonzaga. Gonzaga is, you're right, we overcorrected. They're still a fantastic team.
Is there whiffs of Georgia football? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like in the same sense of like, as you said, like Georgia Ing's a thing. And now, you know, they got to the title game and, you know, whatever, 3rd and 26 or 2nd and 26 happens and Tua throws the touchdown pass and you're like, you just kind of write them off. And then even this year, you know, they go undefeated and they get popped in the SEC championship game. And it just felt like maybe we jumped off the train a little too quickly because I kind of was in the same boat. Like I didn't really care who Georgia played. I was betting Georgia. And then I got burned in the title game, and I'm sitting there going, you're an idiot. Nick Saban was getting points, and you laid them like you're an idiot. I do kind of wonder maybe if with Gonzaga there's an element of how we treated Georgia.
There probably is. I would throw another one at you, and I'll use this example because mid-major and small market, there's an Oakland A's element to them. Make the playoffs all the time, and then you know what they're going to do. They are just going to they're going to let you down. They'll let you there. So there's that element of the A's. I love the Georgia comparison too, because until this year, I mean, Georgia's going to Georgia. And you know, they had to get basically down and out to not. It was Gonzaga's a good squad. They are definitely, to me, that team that I think that you were saying we're looking for. That's who we're looking for. They just got to now go out and do it.
What do you make of Arizona thus far?
I mean, I think they're one of the few teams that can win it. You know, what does Ken Palm have them at? Second overall? Yeah. I mean, this is the second best team.
Ninth in offense, seventh in defense. Like, they fit the profile of a champion.
Yeah. I mean, they fit the profile of the favorite.
Yeah.
Right? They really do. They're a solid basketball team. And it's good to see that, you know, because they had so many issues going on. With the free shoe scandal, the Adidas Nike scandal. So they had some issues, and to their credit, they have gotten through that. But you know, they're easily a title favorite.
How are you okay? I know when Coach K did it affect you the same way when he went down in the second half that it did for me. You know, it's tough to get rid of those headlines, but he did it.
Yeah, he got rid of those headlines. He absolutely did. You know, all you got to do is you got to hit the deck. Coach USC. Now, which headline are we talking about? Is it the headline that LeBron had to get him to put the clamps down on Kobe? Or is it I don't want Tommy Emeker to really coach my team, so we're going to fraud.
It's the Tommy – the one that I think he was really fighting was Tommy Emeker and, you know, it's control of the program and that he's always – you know, he's going to be the evil czar. The funny thing was he was doing his radio circuit yesterday of telling his story. RJ, it sounded like he just had a hangover. He said he celebrated his 75th birthday too hard, needed an IV, was lightheaded, dizzy. I was like, I just think Mikey K got a little too hard in the vino.
Yeah, oh, definitely. Because he doesn't strike me as a straight bourbon guy. I don't see No, he is not pounding the Russell's Reserve. He's not going after any Dickel. No, he's a wine dude. Canis, Nickel, whatever he may be going for, He's definitely a wine guy. He 100% got into it. He got into the Sacramento wine. That's a good Robin Hood Men in Tights reference. He got into it, and then he got some IVs. Not enough. Not enough IVs. Needed more.
I respect his ability to play the media should be studied. Like, because, you know what I mean? Like, literally, he was dealing with serious, like, headlines, and then 12 hours completely gets it to go away. Like, it's unbelievable to me, because I actually thought the funniest thing about the Amaker story, I thought of you when I'm reading it. I was like, because I remember I asked you a couple of weeks ago, I was like, if you look at every major coach, the NCAA in some form or fashion has gotten them or tried to get them.
Yeah.
Tried to get Roy. They got Calhoun. They tried to get Boeheim, Bill Self. Cal has got two titles or two Final Fours taken down at multiple places. But they've never been able to get Mikey K and never been able to get him. And your point was, it's because he keeps it in-house, keeps the family tight. And to me, as I'm reading that story with Amaker, I'm like, oh, no, that makes sense, because while Tommy Amaker is part of the Duke family, he's been gone for 20 years. And you got to keep it in-house because he's worried about controlling that legacy.
He is. Now, if he's worried about, like, you know, stuff getting out, I guess it would, because then Shire would be the odd man out, and he may spill the beans. But now, won't Amaker? Isn't Amaker bitter right now, or is he cool because he's living in Harvard making, you know, decent amount of money, and he's, you know, or he doesn't want the job?
The real question I have is, does Amaker know where the bodies are buried? Like, I think there was a reason he was way more worried about when Jeff Capel left again, because Capel knows where the bodies are buried. Amaker might be gone for so long, the statute of limitations is up.
Maybe. Yeah, that's a good point. But it was weird. Like, you know, if you want a coach, you're going to have to come be an assistant to me and sit on the bench, like, for a year.
He went full Cartman. He's like, he goes, well, and then we'll have to take away the job of somebody else. You don't want to do that, do you? Like, he went full Cartman. It was unreal.
I've never seen anything like it. That was one of the wildest stories I've seen.
When we come back, we'll take a look at the big games of the weekend. We'll get thoughts on that next right here on BetQLU.
From tailgates to rushing the field, on Saturday, it's BetQLU in the action. From noon to 8 Eastern, available on BetQL and the Odyssey app.
You're listening to BetQLU with RJ Choppy and Jeffrey Wright.
Hey, welcome back to BetQLU. RJ, it's kind of the nature of college basketball. We don't get lines. You know, you and I can sit here during the fall and go over a line that's been out a week for a football game, but we don't really get lines basically until later tonight, maybe even tomorrow for college hoops. But I think let's kind of go by it chronologically tomorrow, because I'll be hosting the BetQLU in the action show from noon until 4. If you want to tune in to that tomorrow, let's start chronologically. Illinois, Michigan State. Illinois has been another one of those teams. We didn't really mention them last segment. I don't quite know what to do with them. I also openly admit, if you're a Big Ten team and I'm trying to put you into the national title conversation, like, I need you to prove it, because I just have been burned by so many Big Ten teams that I thought were good. And then I get into the tournament and it's like, what was I doing? I was an idiot. Illinois feels primed to be that candidate for me this year. How do you kind of see this one shaping up? And it's in East Lansing, by the way.
You know, if you look at KenPom, I mean, Illinois is number 15 in the nation, but they also fall into that, you know, they're top 25 in both offense and defensive adjusted efficiency. They're kind of in that area where they're like a fringe title contender, right? I'm kind of with you. I don't buy a whole lot of the Big Ten right now. I think it's a tremendous conference. Very, very balanced. I don't know that there's a real title contender out of there. I don't think Purdue is. I don't think Illinois is yet. I don't think Michigan State is. And Michigan is a team that is done nothing but disappoint. So I'm kind of with you. I would lean Illinois in this one, though.
Yeah, I kind of – so the game's in East Lansing. If KenPom projections end up being the line, which for the most part this year, that's kind of what we've been seeing. Maybe sometimes the line gets bet differently, but it's going to be a one-point advantage for Michigan State. I would kind of be tempted to take points on the road. I don't know why. I just feel like I trust them more. But, you know, you look at it in terms of the top half, like Purdue. Are you really going to believe in Purdue again? Because no, thank you. Like you can have that. And if I get proven wrong, so be it. Like Wisconsin, I don't believe in them. Like it feels like if I'm going to believe in someone, Illinois feels ripe for that spot for me. All right, let's go into some other games throughout the day. 11:30 starting, or at least 11:30 locally. We got Texas Tech in Texas going into Austin. One of my favorite B plots of this entire year has been what Texas Tech has been doing. Like, I feel like Texas Tech has owned like viral videos, everything. Their spite for Texas right now is admirable. Like, I love, like, when you can feel true, it doesn't feel phony. Like, it is true. They hate them. And I just love it.
They do. There's no doubt about that. They've hated them anyway. Everybody hates Tech. Everybody hate. If you're not a Longhorn, you're either with us or against us. If you're not a Longhorn and you live in Texas, you hate Texas. You do. Like, that's just the way it is. Like, everybody hates the University of Texas. And, you know, Longhorn fans, and they can bring this up because it is true. Texas is in a lot of people's heads. When Texas Tech is playing Oklahoma in a football game, someone there is doing the horns down.
Yeah.
Like, Texas ain't even playing the game. What are you doing?
Like, honestly, like, I actually got to the point where I thought Oklahoma's just go-to celebration is just horns down. It's just like you're playing Oklahoma State. Like, in all your there is an element of that. I also think though it's twofold. A, I think it's actually less about Texas living in their heads. I think it's the fact that they know how Oklahoma knows how much it bothers Texas.
Oh,
when you do horns down. Remember they were gonna put in the rule that you can celebrate, like you can have like hand signs as a celebration, but the one you can't do horns down. It's like, that is so soft. Like so soft.
So, what is the difference between horns down and horns up? Dude, I can't do the horns down. Why can't they do the horns up?
It used to bother me, but the Gators can do the Gator chomp, but you can't do it to them. It's like, why? Like, yeah, that makes no logical sense.
It absolutely makes no sense.
I can't tell, though. I feel like I'm going to bet Texas Tech just because, like, I think I just talked myself into it.
Man, I'll tell you, they're a solid team. They're very long on the defensive side of the ball. And their offense is not
believe in shooting either, though.
They do not believe in shooting. No. They are a terrible offense. Texas is not a great offense either, though. This is one of those games where I'm like, you know what? I don't know what the under is, but I'm taking it. I'm probably going to take the under in this game. It just seems that this is a defensive type game, but that other side story where the Red Raider fans have found the code, and this, they found it about a month ago. They found the code to get all the tickets at the Irwin Center. This is the final year. This is the final year of that stadium. And they found all the code to get all the tickets. I mean, this is peak college football petty, and I absolutely love it.
I didn't realize they're getting another arena.
Texas, yeah, this is the last. So they're getting a new basketball arena next year, and that's why Barnes scheduled that game.
Got it. Okay. Okay. I didn't realize it, but I guess, hey, listen, you got to spend the money somehow. So let's just go put up a new arena. Alabama goes to Kentucky. Alabama's this weird team. We talked about it last week. I think everybody else wants to believe in them. There's just something about it. Like, I like Nate Oates as much as everyone. Every time I watch this team play, I leave unimpressed.
Well,
even in wins.
Yeah. I mean, they're the Warriors of college basketball. You know, they're the Splash Brothers. I mean, they're going to sit there and they're going to chuck up 53s in the game. And, you know, if there was a 4-point line, they'd be shooting the most 4-pointers in the game too. I love the style of Nate Oates. And Nate Oates' style can upset any team on any night. But is this a team that I think can win a title? Or make a deep run because they can get hot for four games. But I mean, you know, in terms of, you know, making it to the Final Four, I just don't see it happening. In terms of beating Kentucky, I mean, look, if Kentucky is on their game, I don't know how many teams I would say can actually beat them in the game. I really don't.
Yeah, the other thing about Kentucky right now, I can't remember the last team Cal actually liked. And you can tell, like, he likes coaching this team. You know, they're a little older than what he's used to. He's not completely dependent on the top-end high school talent. You can tell he likes this team. Again, I think if I'm betting that game, I'm obviously taking Kentucky at home, but I'm also watching the injury report and seeing, you know, is Ty good to go? Like, to me, like, that's something clearly to watch. Let's go to your alma mater. Tennessee goes on the road. They've not been a great road team this year, as you pointed out. Arkansas kind of in the same, like, it is, they're kind of in the same mold where Arkansas has not been great away from home, but they've been a very, very good home team. There's also, I feel like, this element of, with Arkansas, I keep wanting them, like, I keep wanting to, be, like, pull the trigger and believe in them, but they haven't done it. This feels like a good opportunity for both teams. Like, Tennessee can kind of change the narrative of they don't win on the road, whereas it feels like with Arkansas, you know, they've got the Auburn overtime win, but this feels like they can kind of keep stacking resume points. Like, I am fascinated from a what-are-you perspective in this game.
Yeah, I think the biggest issue here is, you know, Tennessee's just not a very good road team. I could easily see this being a 12-15-point Arkansas win. You know, that's just the kind of team Tennessee is when they play on the road. They're not very good. And if Arkansas is hot from beyond the arc, I mean, this could get ugly real quick because, you know, Tennessee's offense isn't as good maybe as some of the numbers might suggest. So it is a resume game. There is no doubt. I mean, if Arkansas wins this one, they'll have a quad one win. They'll have a win against a team with probably a pretty good net rating. And if Tennessee wins this game, it's a road win against a quad one team that is going to be in the tournament. I think it's a big resume builder for both. I really do. I just think Arkansas. I think Arkansas wins this one. I mean, if the spread is less than, I mean, it's going to be less than this. I would take this probably about Arkansas by 8 if I was taking it. I just don't have any faith in Tennessee on the road.
Well, I think, honestly, you're going to get your wish because I think Tennessee's probably going to open as a favorite. Maybe like a slight, like a 1-point, 2-point favorite. But I think that's how it's going to open. But I don't know. I kind of lean Arkansas there, but I'm always hesitant.
It sounds like a money line game to me.
Yeah. Then the big one over on ESPN tomorrow night, Oregon goes to Arizona. I thought Oregon was doing classic Dana Altman, slow start, get the guys ready to go, end up being underseeded in the tournament. I don't know, man. Like, I watched them last weekend. They did not impress me. I'm excited about this game because I actually do think, even though Oregon may not be an actual resume line for Arizona, Oregon is a good test of, like, what are you, because they're just so athletic. Like, I am kind of interested to see if Arizona can, like, make a statement tomorrow night.
Do you know where Ken Pom has them rated?
Has Oregon?
80th.
I mean, 80th. At one point, I think it was like Houston's best win, too.
They're behind Texas A&M. They're behind Furman,
they're behind
Vanderbilt.
Vermont.
Yeah. Yeah. They're behind Vandy. Vandy's 13-12. You know, like that. I know what you're mean about Dana Altman and getting them ready. This team just isn't a tournament ready team. Now, unless they pull an Oregon State and do what they did last year and go all the way to the win the Pac-12 or whatever, make a nice little run. Unless they do something like that, they're going to struggle to get in.
Yeah, I think the rule should be if you lose at home to Cal, I can't believe in you. I feel like that's essentially where I net out with them. It's the West Coast equivalent of North Carolina should not be an NCAA tournament team this year just because they lost at home to Pitt. Like, that should be a rule.
Yeah. Man, what happened to Cal sports? Good God.
Ooh, doggies. turns out if you don't really care about it, eventually it comes back to bite you. I'll be with you tomorrow from noon until 4. You can come hang out with us with BetQLU in the action. Connor will be with us, as will Twitch. We'll have all of the live reaction throughout the day. He's RJ Choppy. I'm Jeffrey Wright. I want to thank you for listening to and watching BetQLU.
From tailgates to rushing the field, on Saturday, it's BetQLU in the action. From noon to 8 Eastern, available on BetQL and the Odyssey app.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.